Now, not to take out his citizenship there, to just live there for a while. Like going to Florida or California or something, you know. Till the heat was off. The famine. For the famine was grievous in the land, that is, in the land of Palestine. And then you remember what happened down there. God didn't tell him to go down there. God could have provided for Abraham up there in Palestine. Very well have done it. And he would have. He had made promises to Abraham, and those had to be fulfilled. But Abraham wasn't quite ready here to step out on the promises as he was later on, around 49 years later. And there he was able to believe what God had said concerning his son, and he was going to slay his son under God's orders because he believed that God would bring him back from the dead and fulfill his promise in him. But here, he makes a deal with Sarah, his wife, that they should tell the king that, and the people down there in Egypt, she was his sister. And that was a half-truth. And we won't go into all the details on this. The only thing is he got kicked out of Egypt, gave him plenty of presents and so on, but the king told him to get out. And so he gets. Now the date was about 1921 B.C. Your reference was Genesis 12:10, as we told you at the start. I just made a brief note on that, that Abram into Egypt and Sarah dash sister. That's a way to make short notes. Just a word or two to suggest. All right, your second reference to a famine is in Genesis 26:1. Genesis 26:1. The verse before that, and Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. So here is where that Jacob bargained Esau out of his birthright. And there was a famine in the land. Beside the first famine was in the days of Abraham. That refers us right back to the one we were just talking about, you see, in 12:10. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar. And the Lord appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt. Dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. So he was not to go down into Egypt like his father Abraham had. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and will bless thee, for unto thee and unto thy seed I'll give all these countries, and will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. Well, you can just outline that as happening in 1812 B.C. Quite a few years later. A long time later. Famine in the land again. And Isaac was not to go to Egypt. And he has the same difficulty that Abraham did. He tries to pass Rebekah off as his sister. And it didn't work. It backfired again, like it did with Abram. All right, let's go on to another one. That's two of them now. The next one is Genesis 41:54. And we're just getting almost to that in our studies. This is going to give us a little bit of what we'll hit next week. Genesis 41:54. And the 7 years of dearth, or famine, began to come, according as Joseph had said. And the dearth was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And your note says that this is from 1707 to 1701 B.C. Well, that comes quite a few years after the last one. Almost 100 years after the one that Isaac was in. Famine in Egypt. And Joseph the ruler. There's your notes on that one. All right, that's three of them. Now we skip over several books. Ruth 1:1. Ruth 1:1. It's always hard to find that. You got to get over in the Ezra, Nehemiah neighborhood. Or did I go too far? Yeah, I was thinking of Esther. Ruth belongs along in the period of Judges, doesn't she? I just got way ahead of myself. Right after Judges, just before you get into 1 Samuel. That's what belongs chronologically to. Now, the last famine we had was around 1707 to 1701. When we get to Ruth 1:1, the date is around 1336 B.C., almost 400 years later. And the famine was in Canaan. Now, we have three famines in Canaan and one in Egypt so far. And so when there's a famine in Egypt, or in Canaan, a man by the name of Elimelech and his wife Naomi go over into the land of Moab. I guess they thought maybe more bread over there than in the house of bread, Bethlehem. So they left the house of bread to hunt bread in Moab. And Elimelech and Naomi had two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And they married Moabitish girls. I remember the Moabites were descendants of Lot. Lot had two sons by his two daughters, named Moab and Ammon. Moabites and Ammonites come from Lot. So these are Moabitish girls. And Mahlon married Ruth, and Chilion married Orpah. And of course, you know the story of how that going over into that country and their sons marrying Moabitish girls, and then Elimelech dies. And also Mahlon and Chilion die. And Naomi, the wife of widow of Elimelech now, is left with these two widows, Ruth and Orpah. And you remember the famous speech that Ruth made of she would stick with Naomi and go back with her to her land, and her God would be her God, and her people, and so on. Famous speech. Well, out of all of this, this Moabitish girl, Ruth, gets an elevation something like Joseph did. She marries Boaz. Her son's name is Jesse. His son's name is David. My, what an elevation for a Moabitish girl to be the grandmother of the great King David of Israel. Well, our fifth one is in 2 Samuel 21:1. 2 Samuel 21:1. Page 438. This is a famine in the days of David because of King Saul. It happened in the years of 932 to 930. In other words, about 3 years altogether. Saul was a wicked ruler. He died a disgraceful death along with his sons Jonathan, who was a friend of David. Well, we'll read what it says here, 2 Samuel 21:1. Then there was a famine in the days of David 3 years, year after year, and David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, "It is for Saul and for his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites." Now, just a quick idea of what happened here. When Israel were going into the land, some of the Canaanites, called the Gibeonites, from the city of Gibeah, were scared. They were afraid. And they knew that Israel's God was a powerful God. And so they disguised themselves as travelers from a far-off country. They put on old ragged clothes and worn-out shoes and old bottles, that is, of hides, you know, for water and so on, and met Israel on the way and begged them to help them. And without consulting God, Israel took them in and made a promise to them, a covenant with them. And after they made that covenant, they had to keep it. Now, the Gibeonites have proven a friend most of the time in Israel's history. But because that they were really Canaanites, Saul, in overzeal, trying to do something, you know, without God's direction. He's always trying to do works on his own without getting God's directions on it. Like, he killed a whole lot of these Gibeonites. And so here's the reason for the famines in the land. He slew his Gibeonites with whom Israel had made a covenant. So in verse 2, and the king called the Gibeonites and said unto them, and parenthesis here, now the Gibeonites were not the children of Israel, but the remnant of the Amorites, and the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. Wherefore David said unto the Gibeonites, "What shall I do for you? And wherewith shall I make the atonement, that ye may bless the inheritance of the Lord?" And the Gibeonites said unto him, "We will have no silver nor gold of Saul, nor of his house, neither for us shall thou kill any man in Israel." And he said, "Well, what ye shall say, that will I do for you." And they answered the king, "By man that consumed us, and that devised against us, that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coasts of the Israel, let 7 men of his sons be delivered unto us, and we will hang them up unto the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose." And the king said, "I will give them." And so the Gibeonites hanged up 7 sons of Saul. Now, if you go into this story here, you will find that David spared 1 son of Saul. David had made a promise unto Saul. And this was a young chap by the name of Mephibosheth. If you have trouble pronouncing it, Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth was crippled in his feet from a fall. His nurse had dropped him when there was a quick getaway in Jerusalem and danger. And so Mephibosheth couldn't walk, and he didn't have a wheelchair. And David, because remembering what he had promised to Saul, remember, David never held anything really against Saul. He had every reason to, but he didn't. He always regarded Saul as God's anointed king. And with all of the things that Saul did against him and so on, we would think that David would have some reason for not feeling very well toward Saul, you know. But David wasn't that kind of man. Remember, through David's life, you don't find him really holding a grudge against anybody or hating somebody. There were times when he dealt out justice, and rather rough about it at times when it was needful. But David was not the type of a man to hold a grudge against anybody, to think evil of somebody, or to hold anything against them at all. Now here he sits Mephibosheth at his table to eat with him. I know one of my friends once said, several years ago, he said he was pretty sure that David was gracious enough that he had a tablecloth long enough to hide Mephibosheth's crippled feet. And so we who are really feeding, you know, the table of the Lord, our Lord is really our bread of life, our infirmities are not in view. Well, it's an interesting story about the famine in the days of David because of Saul. 932 to 930, I think I gave you the dates. And the seven sons of Saul hanged, and Mephibosheth was spared. All right, now let's run on to 2 Kings 438. Second Kings 4:38. Talking about Elisha. Elisha, the follower of Elijah, who had Elijah's mantle. And Elisha came again to Gilgal, and there was a dearth or a famine in the land. And the sons of the prophets were sitting before him. And he said unto his servants, set on the great pot, and seize pottage for the sons of the prophets. And one went out into the field to gather herbs, and he found a wild vine, and gathered thereof wild gourds, his lap full, and came and shred them into a pot of pottage, for they knew them not, didn't know what they were. So they poured out for the men to eat. And it came to pass, as they were eating of the pottage, that they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot. And they could not eat thereof. And he said, then bring meal. And he cast it into the pot, and he said, pour out for the people that they may eat. And there was no harm in the pot. Reminds a little bit of the bitter waters that Israel ran into in the wilderness. And there was a way of curing the bitterness of the waters by throwing in the wood. Well, there was quite a famine. And it goes on to say then in verse 42, and there came a man from Baal Shalisha, and brought the man of God, that is Elisha, bread of the first fruits, 20 loaves of barley and full ears of corn in the husk thereof. And he said, give unto the people that they may eat. And his servant said, well, what shall I set this before 100 men? What shall I set this before 100 men? He said again, give the people that they may eat, for thus saith the Lord, they shall eat and shall leave thereof. And he set it before them, and they did eat and left thereof, according to the word of the Lord. Now, if you ever thought that the Lord's miracle in furnishing the bread and fishes for the people and multitudes is the first time something like that happened, you'll have to look here. And also look in the times of Elijah when he stayed at the widow's home and the meal didn't fail nor the cruse of oil. Miracles of providing food. And so here is one of them. Now this, in 2 Kings 4:38, was about 801 to 788. Quite a famine. That'd be about 13 years. 13 years is a number of evil, isn't it? Elisha at Gilgal, and poison in the pot is what I have in my notes, and that's all I have. All right. In the same book, 2 Kings, the 7th chapter, in the 4th verse. And there's an awfully interesting story that comes out of this one. I don't know if we have time to say much about it or not. That's 7:4. And this is in the same period of time. It's really the same famine as the one before, but it's mentioned as if it was a different one because from a different aspect, a different story in connection with it. So really, the date is the same. 801 to 788. But this is in Samaria, not at Gilgal. In In fact, it's before the city Samaria, which was the capital of the country of Samaria. And the king of Samaria at that time was probably Ben-Hadad. I gave you the wrong one. The king of the Syrians was Ben-Hadad, and the king of Israel of Samaria was Jehoram. Now we'll get it all right. And the Syrians were besieging the city of Samaria. Romans 7:4. See what it says. Well, we have to get the story here a little bit. Starting with chapter 7. Now, they had been besieged there in the city until they're getting awfully hungry. They just ran out of food. And they were starting to eat human flesh. And it had come to the ears of the king that a couple of women had a quarrel about eating the son of one of them. And the king was pretty upset about that. And so Elisha says something in chapter 7 there. He says, "Hear ye the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria." They not only didn't have this, but you couldn't get it at any price. He says that tomorrow at this time, they'll be sold real cheap, bargains, in the gate of Samaria. Now with all that Syrian army outside, and the people beginning to become cannibalistic because of the awful famine in the city, that'd be awfully hard to believe, wouldn't it? With all that army all scattered around the city. Well, then a lord, on whose hand the king leaned, answered the man of God and said, "Behold, if the Lord would make windows in heaven, might this same be?" And he said, Elisha says, "Behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but not eat thereof." A little prophecy, isn't it? You know, these prophets have a way of prophesying something like that. Then you wonder, you know, what the answer is going to be. "And there were 4 leprous men at the entering of the gate. And they said one to another, 'Why sit here until we die? If we say we shall enter into the city, then the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. And if we sit here, we die also. Now therefore come, let us fall into the host of the Assyrians. If they will save us alive, we shall live. If they kill us, we shall but die.'" So they're going to go out to the camp of the Assyrians. "And they rose up in the twilight, in the darkness, to go into the camp of the Syrians. And when they were come to the uttermost part of the camp of Syria, behold, there was no man there. The camp was empty. For the Lord had made the host of the Syrians to hear a noise of chariots and a noise of horses, even the noise of a great host. And they said one to another, 'Lo, the king of Israel hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us.' Wherefore they arose and fled in the twilight, in the darkness, and left their tents and their horses and their asses, even the camp as it was, and fled for their life. And when these lepers came into the uttermost parts of the camp, they went into one tent and did eat and drink, and carried thence silver and gold and raiment, and went and hid it, and came again and entered into another tent, and carried thence also, and went and hid it. And then they said one to another, 'We do not well. This day is a day of good tidings, and we hold our peace. If we tarry till the morning light, some mischief will come upon us. Now therefore come, that we may go and tell the king's household.' And so they went and told the king's household, and they went out into the camp and got all of the food and stuff they had, and sure enough, they sold a measure of fine flour for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria. And what happened to this fellow that would see it and not eat of it? Why, the crowd was so anxious to get out the gate and so on, they trampled him down and trampled him to death. So he saw it, but he didn't get to eat of it. Well, I'm telling you the story here because I don't have time to go ahead and read all of it, but this is quite a little incident, and you should go back and read the whole story sometime for yourself. It's interesting. Well, now, I told you the date, that was the same as the one before, 801 to 788. And in Samaria, the Syrians besieging it. There's another story in connection with that. We don't have time to bother that at all now. You'll have to read more of your stories in the Kings. But in this same book, 2 Kings 25:3, that's going on several chapters, 25:3, and the date is about 479. Now remember that in 496, Nebuchadnezzar had besieged Jerusalem, and they were put really into servitude. They had to pay a great amount of money to Babylon. Well, then a little later, they didn't perform their part of the bargain satisfactorily, and so he came again to Jerusalem, and this time he took a whole bunch of them captive. And so we have a siege of Jerusalem in 479, and Nebuchadnezzar is laying siege to it. Well, let's just read a little bit of that. 25:3. And on the ninth day of the fourth month, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no bread for the people of the land. And the city was broken up. All the men of war fled by night by the way of the gate between two walls, which is by the king's garden. Now the Chaldees were against the city round about. And the king went away toward the plain. And the army of the Chaldees pursued after the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho. And all his army was scattered from him. So they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon to Riblah, and they gave judgment upon him. And they slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, and put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and bound him in fetters of brass, and carried him into Babylon. Now there's an interesting little story back of this. It had been told that though he was to die in Babylon, yet he would never see it. And he didn't. His eyes were put out. He was told that he would see the king of Babylon, but that wasn't in Babylon, that was here in the plains of Jericho. So we have another one of those interesting prophecies and how it was carried out. Defined in reference in Ezekiel 12:13. And Jeremiah 32:4 and 34:3. Well, I won't go into any more of the story on that, excepting that they took the king of Babylon to, and they burnt the house of the Lord and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem, every great man's house, burnt he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard break down the walls of Jerusalem round about. And so on. So, this is the actual desolations then. Now remember that there was 70 years of the servitude. A little while after that began the captivity. And then finally the desolations. Now from the beginning of the first one in 486 B.C. to the next one is 17 years, at least till the last one. So here was three periods of 70 years running partly concurrently. But you would have to add 17 onto the 490 years, or the 70 years, I mean, excuse me, onto the 70 years to get the total number. And of course, that would make you 87 years. Well, there's a story on that, and I don't think we need to go into any more of that. So this was 479, the siege of Jerusalem and Nebuchadnezzar. And Zedekiah saw Nebuchadnezzar, but never saw Babylon. All right, our next one is Nehemiah 5:3. Now we're getting back to our Ezra and Nehemiah. Nehemiah is right after Ezra. And Nehemiah 5:3. The people are in the land have been rebuilding and so on, but they have been very poor, also having a famine. And so here in 5:3, some also there were that said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses that we might buy corn because of the dearth or famine. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and vineyards. Well, they finally had to settle this thing some way. And I'll tell you one way they settled it, and this is getting to be a problem even today in our own land. We find that these Jews were charging each other usury, interest, for loans, for money to buy bread and pay the king's tribute and so on. Not as forbidden in the law for a Jew to charge another Jew interest. He might of a Gentile, but not of another Jew. Now, that comes into questions of usury and so on. I don't know where interest ends and usury begins. I'm not a man that knows about all of these financial things. Economics is not my major by any means. Well, that is about 454, this Nehemiah 5:3. And in the building of the city, we find them working a sword in one hand and a trowel in the other. The city was being rebuilt, but usury was ruled out. All right, and I'll turn to Jeremiah 14:1. That's a pretty good skip. Jeremiah 14:1. About page 1036. Jerusalem has been wandering away from the Lord, and so having to suffer for it, and it's a literal drought. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah concerning the dearth or famine. Judah mourneth, and the gates are out of language. They are blackened to the ground, and the cry of Jerusalem is gone up. And their nobles have sent their little ones to the waters. They came to the pits and found no water. They returned with their vessels empty. They were ashamed and confounded and covered their heads. Because the ground is chapped, dry, for there was no rain on the earth. The plowmen were ashamed. They covered their heads. Yea, the hind also calved in the field and forsook it because there was no grass. And the wild asses did stand in a high place as they snuffed up the wind like dragons. Their eyes did fail because there was no grass. And so Jeremiah prays unto the Lord and tells about their failings and so on. Well, we won't dare to go into that story. The only thing is that this was about 497 or 480 the time. And it is a prophecy about a judgment coming from Babylon. So this fits in with what we were reading about before. All right, now, that finishes our Old Testament. Let's go to Luke 15:14. We have two in the New Testament. Luke 15:14. I blurred that here. I think that's the right reference. Yes, it's right. This is the story of the prodigal son. And he wanted his father to give him a portion that was his inheritance. And so the father gave him what he was to have. And says, not many days after the young men gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And verse 14, and when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. It wasn't even as wise as a little squirrel. He didn't save any of his patrimony. Well, he hadn't earned it, and people who get money and they don't earn it, they can't keep it. somehow or other. A man robs a bank. It's a very, very short time. It's all gone. All spent. Somehow, he just can't keep ill-gotten gains. It's very rare for a man to do that. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, a foreigner, a Gentile, got hired, and he sent him into fields to feed swine. Wouldn't that be a come down for a Jew to go out in the field and feed swine, feed the hogs? And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. Well, I'm not going to go on with the whole story, but gives you the gist of it. He got pretty low, didn't he? And yet he came back and restored in his father's house. His father's son. It's a good story. Now we're going to Acts 11, 28. Acts 11, 28. Now, verse 27. Well, I'll make it back to 26. They were having quite a revival at Antioch, and so Barnabas went over to Tarsus, Saul's hometown, and got him, brought him over there. And a whole year they assembled themselves at a church and taught much people, and the disciples were called Christians first in Antioch. The Jews didn't call them Christians. That name would have been hateful to them. No doubt, it was the heathen people there, the Gentiles, that called them that, and more or less in derision, but the name has stuck. And so followers of Christ today, even though in pretense, are called Christians. Verse 27, in those days came prophets from Jerusalem unto Antioch. And there stood up one of them, named Agabus, and signified by the Spirit, that is, by the Holy Spirit himself, a person, that there should be a great dearth or famine throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. Well, we don't have too much trouble with that. I might say that in the last one that we gave from Luke 15:14, I didn't give you the date there. But that was about 28, A.D. 28, when the Lord was speaking that parable. I didn't give you that. Now this Acts 11:28 we have here, this prophecy of Agabus, could be all the way from 41 to 54 A.D. I'm just giving you a round number here on that. I might, from my charts and so on, here give you a little more specific. It's a famine, and it's in connection, of course, with the Christians at Antioch. And the story goes on to tell us, then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. Quite a famine over there in the land, which also they did, and sent it to the elders in Jerusalem by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Now this is one of the visits of Paul to Jerusalem after his Damascus road experience. And that is something for you to work on sometime, is those five visits to Jerusalem. She isn't very much told about it. But this last famine we have mentioned in our Bible, excepting something prophetic, of course, over in the Revelation, has to do with the disciples here at Antioch, and they're sending relief over to Jerusalem. So there are 13 times that famine is used in the Bible, and 13, of course, being a number of evil. If you want to go on another study like that, you can take up in the New Testament the word leaven, and it occurs 13 times. And of course, it is a symbol of evil. So now we will end our lesson here and let's have our prayer. Dear Father, we are thankful for thy word, for thy word is truth. And we love it as truth. We love it because it speaks of thy Son, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We love it because it speaks of him as our head. We, the members of the church, which is his body. And we are thankful for teaching us from day to day the truth concerning him, that we might know thy plan and purpose for the ages, thy plan and purpose for us, even into the heavenly places. Thankful for this mystery revealed to us in these days. And we do ask that thou wilt guide and direct as we study from week to week and day to day, that we may keep our eyes upon Christ, our affection on things above, and that we might minister to the needs of people, that they might learn to love him, honor him, and especially to